Hello and welcome to another season of the Salt and Light Hour. I'm Deacon Pedro. Today on the show.
I ask you something?
I feel secure in the certainty that answering no won't stop you.
Why would a man who can't hold a hammer choose to be a contractor?
Ask me in 6 months when we're bankrupt.
I'm serious.
So am I. I guess I like to just see houses like this for what they can be, not what they are. Or maybe I just have something to prove.
Not to me.
That's a scene from a new film, Soul on Fire, based on the true story of John O'Leary, who at 9 years old was given less than 1% chance of survival after an accident left him with burns covering his whole body. We're going to be speaking with Macy McLean, who plays Beth O'Leary, John's wife, in the film. She tells us that the film is not really about beating impossible odds. I mean, it is about that, but there's so much more. That's a conversation about the film Soul on Fire with actor Macy McLean in about 5 minutes. And then Billy has a question about the Pope, and the answer will give you a good reason to keep the Holy Father in your prayers. So that's Church for Dummies in about 15 minutes. And then in our second half hour,
Carlo Acutis and I became friends, heavenly friends, when he, a long time ago, it's like 2020, and okay. I just was looking for a saint to do a novena to, and he landed on the day that I was going to end, and so I picked him, and I really have had a devotion to him. But prior to knowing him, yes, that when I lived in Nashville for many years, the campus chapel, Vanderbilt University chapel, was for Saudi House. So where, yes, I fell in love with Jesus in adoration, going there, have, you know, being able to get through the crazy music industry was for Saudi, was with me.
That singer-songwriter Marie Miller, who's been on this program many, many times, she has a new song dedicated to new saints Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati. So she's going to tell us all about that and also about her Way of Love presentations and about the relics of another special saint who is going to be visiting a city near you. So you don't want to miss my conversation with Marie Miller in about 25 minutes. And we're going to be playing some of her new music. So lots of good stuff this week on the Salt and Light Hour. If you can't stay to listen to the full program, you can catch the whole show on the Salt and Light Plus app and also on our Salt and Light YouTube channel and anywhere you get your podcasts. Let's start with a song. Here's Marie Miller with Take, Lord, Receive from her album, The Way of Love.
Take, Lord, receive my liberty, my memory, understanding, my Lord, I give it all back to you. Give me your love and your grace, for with this I have all that I need. Lord, I
listening to Marie Miller with Take, Lord, Receive from her album, The Way of Love. And we're going to be speaking with Marie Miller at the end of the program, so I hope that you can stick around for that.
Do you like to dance, Beth?
No, but I will.
Who is that guy?
John O'Leary. He's kind of a legend around here.
Why didn't you ask me out the night we met?
Figured you wouldn't want me to. Welcome to the first project of O'Leary and Bright's Construction. Woo!
Oh, oh, oh. Yeah, everybody grab a hard hat.
I may have an idea for a way that we could work together.
Public speaking? I hope you got better at it.
Remarkable.
The most powerful weapon on Earth is the human soul on fire.
In January 1987, when John O'Leary was just 9 years old while playing in the garage, he accidentally caused an explosion which set him on fire. The incident resulted in burns on 100% of his body, with the doctors giving him little to no chance of survival. John O'Leary tells the story in his 2016 best-selling book, On Fire. This book has just been adapted into film, which recounts his miraculous recovery and how John endures an unbelievable road to recovery with the support of his family, faith, community, and the kindness of his all-time idol, Baseball Hall of Famer announcer, Jack Buck, and goes on to become a best-selling author, speaker, and a global voice of hope. More than a survival story, though, the film is about the power of faith, family, and community to turn tragedy into purpose and despair into hope. Soul on Fire is an inspiring story about choosing faith over fear and purpose over pain, a message audiences of all ages can connect with in today's world. Earlier this week, I spoke with actor Macy McLean, who plays John O'Leary's wife, Beth. Hi, Macy. Welcome to the Salt and Light Hour. It's good to meet you.
Oh, it's good to meet you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, of course. We've just been hearing a little bit about what the film is about, the story, John O'Leary's story. But I'm curious to know, in your words, what would you say the film is really about?
In my words, I would say the film is about overcoming impossible odds. I would say it's about, I mean, the obvious thing is it's about a little boy who got burned. And John wouldn't say it was an accident. He actually says, no, I made the choice to set.
Right.
You know, the gasoline. And but it's a story of not just him choosing to physically live, but him choosing to live every single day after that. And not just live, I don't even mean physically, I mean to truly live in the full extent of what that word means. And I think it's a story that I think we can all relate to, because I think we all can relate to either being in the pit of the rubble of something that's happened to us, whether something's blown up in our lives or, you know, dreams have been crushed or relationship shattered, whatever it is. But we can either be a victim there and stay there, or we can make the choice to be a victor. And I think John's story is the most beautiful example of what it looks like when you actually make that choice and the ripple effect that your life can have from that one choice.
Right. I love how you put that it's about life. Would you say that then that's a spiritual, or it's a faith? It's a movie about faith.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, it has a strong faith thread all throughout the movie. To me, the movie is the epitome of the gospel. I think that God looks at us in our most broken selves, in the most broken places, the most shameful parts of us, the worst of the worst parts of us. I mean, we're all broken. We're all depraved. And he says, I choose you. And I choose you so much. I love you so much that I sent my son to die for you. And something that is a mirror of, to me, the way the true love story between John and Beth of, you know, she looks at him and his deepest insecurities and all of his scars and his brokenness. And she says, I choose you. I'm not going anywhere. And I just think that is a picture of what the gospel is. And I think their love story is a display of that.
Yeah. I'm correct in saying that you knew John before the film, right?
I didn't know.
Oh, okay. So you
I
met him.
wish I did. I wish I'd known John longer. Like,
So what was it, that aspect? Like, what drew you personally when you saw the script, when they approached you and you're like, yeah, I really want to play Beth?
oh, it was. I mean, there are rare scripts you get that when you get them in your hands, you have that feeling of I have to tell this story. And there's so much content out there and so many amazing stories, but this is a story I feel like that will shake people in the best way. I'd like to say it's like a lightning bolt to purpose of if you feel like you are stuck in the mundane, if you feel like you are struggling to fight for why am I here on this earth? What is my purpose? This film is going to ignite something in you. That will be that'll spur you on into the purpose that you were created for. I fully believe that. And I felt that when I was reading the script.
Yeah, what an important message. Was there any moment either in the script or while you were working on set that kind of really resonated or brought all this to life for you?
Yeah, there's mo many moments. One of my favorite moments is and it's a scene with Beth and John in the dorm room. They're in college. And it really is the first time that John is being vulnerable with Beth. And it's because she kind of, Beth has this beautiful thing about her where she continually calls John forth into his purpose and forth into like from darkness into light. I really, she just is constantly ushering him out of his shame and out of his insecurities and into the light of like, hey, you can share this stuff with me. I'm a safe place. I'm not going anywhere. I love you. And that scene is really the first beginnings of that vulnerability in their relationship and what that love really looks like. And I love it because Beth is just a safe place. And I that really resonated of what that looks like to be for someone to feel like they can share the darkest parts, their scars and you're not going anywhere.
Yeah, that's really beautiful because I think that a huge theme in the film is exactly that, is that the unexpected people that come into our lives
Yeah.
when we need them. And clearly for you, Beth was that person for John, or one of those people for John. Is there someone in your own personal life that maybe has been there for you that you can share?
Oh yeah. Someone I would love to share about. She's a mentor of mine. Her name is Renee. And in my own story, in a really difficult season, she told me one time, she was just like, Macy, I need you to choose to believe that you can walk through this season, but I can't choose it for you. You have to choose it. And she gave me so that sounds like such a simple thing to say to someone, but there's so much power. I don't know. I just think, there's a verse in scripture that says, in the power of the tongue, there is death and life. Choose life. And the words we speak over people are
Yeah, it's
so
so
powerful. And
true.
for some reason, what she said to me of, I need you to choose that you can be a victor in your situation. You got to get out of the pit. You've got to choose. And that just was so powerful to me and gave me agency to have that in my own life. And I was like, I can do this. I can walk through this season and I can come out of this season. I can come out of this season way better than I was before it because God says he works all things together for good for those that love him and are called to his purpose. And he can redeem 10 times over anything that we thought was lost or broken or stolen or destroyed.
Yeah,
And
it's
yeah,
it
she
it's
was that
really,
person.
yeah, absolutely. It's really a message of hope. And so maybe in conclusion, what is your hope for all the people that are going to get to watch the film?
My hope, I really hope that people that watch the film, to kind of go off of what I was just saying, is, we are all going to have things in our lives that are stolen from us, that are broken, that are destroyed, that are killed. There's a verse in scripture, John 10:10 says, the enemy has come to kill, steal, and destroy, but I have come to give you life and life abundantly. And we are all going to have things that the enemy completely steals from us, kills from us, destroys in our lives. But absolutely, whatever is stolen, God can replenish. Whatever is killed, God can resurrect those things in your life. Whatever is destroyed, God can rebuild.
He has come to give you life and life abundantly. But there's such a key part that we have to choose that. We have to choose to believe that he is the God that works all things together for good. And he is the God that can completely redeem any situation. Nothing's too far gone.
Yeah, that's so well said. You really made me realize that it's really a film about life, about giving life to people. And you have given me, and I think our listeners, a little bit of life today. So thank you so much for that. And for working on the film. It's been great meeting you, Macy.
Oh, thank you so much.
That was a conversation I had with actor Macy McLean, who stars in the new film Soul on Fire, based on the incredible story of John O'Leary. The film opened in theaters all across the United States on October 10th. To find a theater near you, go to soulonfiremovie.com. And to listen to this conversation again, visit our website, slmedia.org.
I'm Blake.
And I'm Megan.
And we're Flynn.
And you're listening to the Salt and Light Hour with Deacon Pedro.
The best place to listen to the Salt and Light Hour is on the Salt and Light Plus app. Visit your app store and download for free. And now it's time for
Just for Dummies
with Billy Chan.
Yeah.
Fresh off the... Can we tell people where you were on vacation?
Yes, I was in Japan. I went to Japan. I went there 3 years ago, and this is the second. Yeah, and we go again because of a movie, Oppenheimer, and it's all about nuclear bomb,
the atomic bomb.
Atomic bomb. And I want to go visit Hiroshima to see things. That's what my
intention. Yeah, because last time you didn't go to Hiroshima, did you?
No, last time was not, the movie was not there yet.
Yeah. No, but you're, yeah, exactly. So, but you went to Hiroshima, but you, not Nagasaki, just Hiroshima?
No, yeah. Nagasaki is just too far.
It's too
we
far.
We find it out is too far, and the transportation is not as, it's quite pricey.
Yeah,
it's quite
pricey. Expensive. Yeah, of course. I'm sure they have a high-speed train, but it's expensive. Good. I'm sure there was good food and lots of tourists.
A lot of tourists. I was so surprised that in Hiroshima there are a lot of foreigners,
who live there
and also who visit.
Expats.
They really want to know more about the Second World War. I just spent a day there. Give me some time here, okay? I need to share this.
Okay.
I thought I only need to spend 30 minutes in the museum, the Peaceful Memorials Museum. But I spent more than 2 hours inside.
Yeah, probably.
And it's all because of it's not a very big place to go, but it's just a lot of things to see. And in every things that you see, the broken stuff, there are a lot of kid clothing.
Yeah,
that you can see, while the atomic bomb was explode, and just everyone was so silent and peaceful, and go over. It's very difficult.
It's a memorial. That's what it's a. I can
and
imagine
when, exactly.
But that's not what you want to talk to us about today.
No,
you have
I
questions
don't.
About the Pope.
I have a question about the Pope, and this question is asked by a lot of non-believers, which is very interested on the leaders of our church.
Yeah.
So what they ask, now the Pope is an American, Pope Leo is an American, but after they are elected as a Pope, what's their nationality? So do they belong to Vatican, or do they belong to United States?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So the Vatican will issue him a passport, although I even wonder if that's a good question. Like, I wonder if he actually has to show a passport when he goes into a country. Interesting side story. When the Pope Mobile came to Canada, we actually had to get Canadian license plates, like provincial license plates for the Pope Mobile, so that they could drive it in Canada, because you couldn't drive it in Canada. Strange, eh? You think that you'd be able to drive it in Canada with some sort of other foreign driver license. But I don't know if the Pope has to show a passport, but I know the Vatican does issue passports. The Vatican does have, like, the Vatican City does have residents. But technically the Pope as monarch, like, the Vatican is a monarchy. So technically the Pope as monarch, it's like he is, this is a little strange, but it's like the monarch, like the king is the state. Like, he's not the head of state. He is the state. So to say that he's a resident of himself is a little weird. However, I think Pope Francis kept, I mean, they will keep their nationality unless they resign it. Unless right?
Okay.
And I heard a story that Pope Francis in 2014 renewed his Argentinian passport. So he felt like he still needed to have his Argentinian passport. As far as I know, Pope Leo will keep his U.S. citizenship unless he resigns it. And he's also a citizen of Peru. He's a national of he has Peruvian citizenship. And I also believe that he will only, like, he will keep that unless he resigns it. So as far as I know, he's still technically a citizen. He has dual citizenship of the United States and Peru until he resigns it. And he doesn't have to.
It's interesting. You know, some of the country does not allow to have dual citizenship.
Yeah, some countries don't. In fact, it's interesting because I thought the United States was one of those countries, but clearly they allowed him to have Peruvian citizenship. So I'm not sure how that works.
Exemption. Okay. A lot of exemption, maybe.
And they might make an exception for him as Pope. They're not going to say, you know, you need to tell us if you're a U.S. citizen.
Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. So now the next question is about money. Yeah. So we know our priest has income. We know bishops has income. But does the Pope has income?
So no, the Pope does not earn a salary. And let me just make a distinction. So diocesan priests will have an income, but religious priests do not. Mm-hmm. So a religious priest, they're taken care of, and they have maybe they even get a stipend, but they don't have any expenses. So if they need an expense, they can ask
for the congregation, right?
And so Pope Francis, as a Jesuit, would have been a religious. He would have taken vow of poverty. So in that sense, as a Jesuit, he doesn't have an income. And Pope Leo is also a religious. He's an Augustinian, so it's the same thing. He would have had a vow of poverty. Now, I would assume that nobody knows. If you look this online, nobody knows. I'm going to assume that the Pope does not receive a salary, but the Pope probably does have a stipend. All his expenses are taken care of. Obviously, he doesn't have to pay rent. He doesn't need to, you know, buy a car or pay his driver. I mean, he's got a budget. There's probably an office budget, the papacy expenses. And I'm sure that if the Pope needed to go buy shoes or something, he could have money for shoes. But it's very likely that he has a stipend. And it's also very likely that, I don't know about Pope Leo, but I'm assuming that Pope Francis probably took his stipend and used that to buy pizza for the homeless people. Or to donate it to charities.
Yeah. I heard about that as well. So does it mean the bishops, you know, who have income, does it mean they also need to pay tax for the country?
That's a very good question. I think that depends on the country. I believe in Canada and also in the United States, clergy will pay personal income tax. There are exemptions for clergy, kind of similar to like volunteers or like volunteer firefighters, that they get exemptions or rebates. I know when I do my income tax, I don't receive an income, so it doesn't qualify. I don't qualify, but there is a clergy exemption or something like that. I'm not sure. The Pope, this I do know for sure. The Pope, technically as a U.S. citizen, he actually has to pay U.S. taxes, even though he lives abroad. And he would have had to pay tax when he was in a missionary in Peru. He would have had to pay taxes in the United States. And the only way to avoid paying taxes in the United States is to resign their citizenship. So I'm not sure. Again, I'm not sure if that's, you know, like he has to send a letter or how that works, or maybe he just pays taxes based on his foreign income. But if he doesn't have an income, I don't know how that works. Yeah,
I don't know why, you know, everyone are so interested on personal life of Pope Francis, on Pope Leo, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting. It's such a bizarre situation. Yeah,
there is also questions about, once you are Pope, and can the Pope take vacations?
The Pope can take vacation, and they do. Pope Francis was well known for saying that because he said, we need to be poor, not just a poor church, but we need to be poor. And he says that one of the privileges of people who are not poor is that they can go on vacation. Poor people don't go on vacation. So that's why he was very adamant about not taking vacation, which is why he never went to Castel Gandolfo. He just kind of kept working. Pope Leo has already taken time off. He's already going on vacation. And in fact, he's not working on Tuesdays. That is a thing that just came out. And he's not, I mean, he might be doing some private work, but he's not doing any audiences. He's not meeting with people. He's not having any meetings on Tuesdays. His calendar is clear. So that might reflect the fact that he feels that he needs to take some time off. Because as you know, you work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, you know, that takes a toll.
And, you know, when they take times off, can they spend time with whoever they want? Like his friends, family?
Yeah, they can, but probably not outside of the Vatican. So like if the Pope wants to go visit his family in the United States, he probably can't just go, you know, golfing in Florida. So, but his family can go visit him in the Vatican. He can probably go to Castel Gandolfo or a place like that. But it would not be easy for him to just go down the street for a pizza with his cousin or something.
Yeah, there's another question.
He could do that, but I think that would be very difficult.
That's exactly another question that people ask about, can the Pope go to see a movie himself?
Yeah, no. He probably could. What's that movie where the Pope puts on regular secular civilian clothing and just goes outside because he wants to and nobody recognizes him?
Yeah.
So maybe he can go see a movie that way. But no, it would not. And it's not because he can't. Mm-hmm. But it's because he's a public figure, he would be recognized. And he has a security detail. And, you know, like if he wanted to drive, he probably can't drive. Just like, hey, I would like to go for a drive. It's like, no, Holy Father, we're going to drive you. And as soon as that car comes out of the Vatican, everybody knows.
Just like a president, right? A president just cannot like a president. Really like go anywhere they want. They need to prepare for all the security measure and everything, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's all my question about...
those are very good questions, yeah.
And it's very interesting because of we thought the Pope should have freedom, should do anything he wants, all because of a public figure. It's not because he is a Pope.
Yeah, it's also... I've heard from bishops mm-hmm. that being a bishop is a very lonely place. Is because and that's part of the sacrifice that they make to take on that leadership role, because it's not as easy to make friends. You can't just go to a party. Yes. You can't just go. You know, it's so it can be very lonely.
And that's why Pope Francis always asks people to pray for him.
Pray for him. Yeah, absolutely. Right? We have to keep the Holy Father in our prayers so that he gets the rest that he needs. Mm-hmm. And so that he gets the leisure time that he needs, because we all need that, and that he can be Pope for the next 25 years.
Yeah. You know what, Deacon Pedro, if you are lonely, just call me and we can
go for sushi again. Okay, sounds good. Sushi or dim sum with Billy. All right, there you go. So people can also contact Billy at Bijo Chan if you're feeling lonely and you need to go for dim sum or sushi.
Feel free.
Call Billy Chan and also ask him some good questions. Thank you, Billy, for that. Billy Chan, our Church for Dummies expert. Follow him at Bijo Chan. Coming up in our second half hour, we catch up with singer-songwriter Marie Miller, who has a new song for Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati. So stay tuned. Hello and welcome to the Salt and Light Hour Part 2. I'm Deacon Pedro.
I am doing that mostly, which is so fun. And that is a combination of my songs and stories and the life and teachings of Saint Therese. And so I've been going all over the country doing that and really enjoying it.
Very soon, we're going to be speaking with singer-songwriter Marie Miller, who has a new song about Saint Carlo Acutis and Saint Pier Giorgio Frassati. But before that, let's listen to another song from her album, The Way of Love. Here's Among These Rocks.
Walking on broken granite through the shifting sand, I don't want to slip. Will you take my hand? Met you under an old tree in the cool of day. I told you I've been wondering, you'd asked if I'd stay.
Listening to Marie Miller with Among These Rocks from her album The Way of Love. Marie Miller has been on our program several times. In the last 10 or so years, Marie has released 5 albums, and most recently one inspired by the writings of Saint Therese titled The Way of Love. The last time Marie was on the show, in June 2024, when she was telling us about The Way of Love, Marie, who is an accomplished folk artist, she plays the mandolin. She told us that she was thinking about leaving the secular events and dedicating herself totally to Catholic events. So that's where we started our conversation this time. Marie, welcome back to the Salt and Light Hour. Always so good to see you.
Always so good to see you and to be with you.
Yes, and I've been worried about you, but I don't think that's the right word, because last time we spoke, you were. Can I say that you were discerning whether you were going to kind of let go of all the secular stuff, which honestly, not that it was bad, but it was fun. And you're really good at it. And you were just going to kind of dive completely into the whole Catholic thing, which is terrifying, I think.
Yeah. So it is super terrifying. Yeah. So you're exactly right. It's discerning. What's been really amazing is that after deciding to kind of go away from the secular things, that God has really opened up a lot of opportunities and a lot of really fun ones. Because I grew up in doing folk music, doing pop music, played a lot of festivals, but actually there's not a lot of Catholic artists that can perform American standards, right? That can sing The Way You Look Tonight. Like, that's not what they do. And so I'm being hired to perform at just the other weekend. I was in Santa Barbara performing at the Ritz-Carlton, and I got to sing those American standards for a nice event, but it was a Catholic event. And so I'm seeing that. I'm doing kind of a lot of the old stuff that I did, plus all the religious liturgical work as well.
I understand. So it's not like you're not doing the secular music. You're just not doing the secular events. Is that what you mean?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And then, and I guess I shouldn't say out loud that Catholic events can't be fun. I didn't mean that, but obviously you've said that is fun. So it's keeping you busy. There's enough there to keep you busy.
Yes, there truly is. It's been really amazing and surprising and very good. So I think that a lot of the conference event teams and the parishes and things are starting to learn a little bit about what I'm doing. And so I've been getting a lot of invitations, and I have to say that it's what gives me wings. Performing is what is the joy, yes, in this life that God has given me. So I am so grateful when I get an email, and my sister is my booking agent. So she's always passing on, okay, do you want to go to Salt Lake City? Do you want to go to, you know, to all these different places? And I always say yes. Always.
Okay. Yeah. And yeah, I always thought of you as, maybe because you've told me, but that you're much more of a performer. You know, you're a recording artist because you have to, but you really love just being in front of an audience. Doesn't have to be a big audience. I think that you'd be happy in just in someone's living room, just kind of doing some of your music or some of those old classics that you were just talking about, right?
Yes, exactly. It really doesn't matter how many people, but I love performing so much. And so, yeah, always happy to do it, and just really blessed that, you know, the fear was, oh, was there enough events to go around for me? Because I've always done both, but it has been really great so far.
Mm-hmm. Now, I also think that it would make me a little sad to hear that you were only going to, you know, banquets and doing old classics and not doing your own music and maybe even sharing some of those stories, especially with the last album, Way of Love. I remember you were telling me that you were starting to do Way of Love presentations. Is that what you call them?
Yes. Yeah. So I am doing that mostly, which is so fun. And that is a combination of my songs and stories and the life and teachings of Saint Therese. And right. So I've been going all over the country doing that and really enjoying it. And we'll be actually performing in front of her relics in Lafayette, Louisiana. Yeah. So that's been a great gift. And also just, there's a lot of events that they need both a speaker and a musician. And so that's been really special to be able to lead music for Mass and Adoration, and then to also give a talk / musical presentation for Therese.
Right. So tell me a little more about that. Is it mostly like parish missions where you do music at Mass and then you do a presentation several evenings, or is it more like a retreat setting or both?
It's been all of the above. A lot of the women's conferences, I've been doing that for colleges and parishes. And that has been really fun. I love Therese. And I remember when I was really afraid, and we were talking about The Chosen, I was really jealous. Yeah. You were at the Chosen premiere. That was a really helpful moment for me when I started watching that and realizing that the disciples were broken but chosen. And so I love presenting on Therese because it takes the focus off of me. When we're talking about, I'm performing my songs, but I don't want to be the teacher. I just want to be the person that's representing something else, right? I'm not a PhD or a priest, but I want to point people towards someone who's really helped me, and Saint Therese is part of that.
So did you feel that before you weren't doing that because you hadn't found that maybe kinship with Therese? Like you couldn't do that with your other songs, even though they were about Jesus or about your relationship with God? That there's something different about how Therese helps you do that? Is that what you mean?
Definitely. So Saint Therese's emphasis is on God's merciful love. And she never talks about how good she is, but how good God is. And so having that emphasis on mercy, she compares herself to the woman at the well. She wants to quench the thirst of God. And I thought about, wow, the woman at the well and Saint Therese are really different. What she's saying is when it's about God's mercy, it's not about you anymore. And so it's really helped me be brave when I talk about Jesus, because before I was so worried that someone would say, who do you think you are talking about Jesus? You're a sinner. And I would kind of go, yeah, it got into my head, but she kind of gave me the cure to just not worry about it and to point towards him.
Really? You really felt that way? I'm so surprised to hear you say that, because you'd think that, especially with some of the audiences that we get to speak with or perform in your case, that they would know that we're all sinners. And that, of course, who better than the woman at the well? Not that that's you either, but to speak about that relationship with the one who has brought her living water, no?
I know. And I think it's definitely my own human feelings and also the evil one who just didn't want me to sing right. about Jesus, because that I really struggled with that. And I still sometimes struggle with it. I will perform and go, oh my goodness, that feels, am I good enough to sing about this? And because before, when you're singing about a boy who broke up with you, it's pretty easy. But right. when you're, yeah, something a little more serious, something that's most important to you can be scary. But again, she's helping me. I pray to her before every time I sing and speak about her, and she helps me.
Yeah, she's a great saint. My mother had a great devotion to Saint Teresa. Her name, my mother's name was Teresa. And of course, she had a devotion to both Teresas, but I think Saint Teresa was one of her favorites for sure. I think she was like a closet Carmelite, my mother.
I like that term.
Yeah, probably. Tell me a little bit more about that relic tour. I'm sure that if there are any listeners in the Lafayette area or that, I mean, anywhere that can drive to Lafayette, they'd want to know about these relics.
Yeah. So St. Therese is coming to the U.S. She is going to, and maybe Canada. I don't know. I've been kind of focusing.
I don't know.
Yeah. But she is coming to North America for sure. And she will be in many places, all the way from D.C. to California. So okay. definitely look that up, St. Therese Relic Tour, and you'll be able to see if she's in your area. And so she will be in my area in Virginia, but also uh-huh. I will be traveling to Lafayette to do that, to sing in front of her relic. So that will be really exciting. And then I'll still be speaking on her all over the country, but that's the only time where her and I will be together physically. So yeah, it'll be fun.
It sounds like fun, but it sounds very meaningful for you.
Yes.
To have that opportunity.
Yeah, super meaningful. It's and it was so special to get a call from a mother superior of a Carmelite monastery that her name is Mother Teresa. And she called me and asked me to sing. I mean, it's just amazing. I don't think Carmelite sisters call people all the time. So
no, they don't.
Yeah. So very special that she wanted me to come and do this.
Yeah. Okay. So then if people are interested, even if they're not interested, they should go check it out, because Saint Therese is one of those great saints. And, even if you're not too sure about the whole relic thing, because some people might find that a little strange, mm-hmm. There's definitely a power there, right? You'd say that there's a power to the relics, to the presence of the saint?
Yes, and I totally understand. I'm not a relics crazy person.
No?
The way that some people are, and that's the gift of our faith, is that we have a universal church that has a lot of different things that are part of our church. You don't have to be obsessed with every single thing when it's outside of just total, you know, the Jesus, be obsessed with him, okay? You know, the Eucharist, there we go. But yeah, relics doesn't have to be your thing necessarily. But what I will say is that just spending that time learning about her and basically just being in her presence, whether you think of it spiritually, physically, whatever, mm-hmm. That she wants to help. When she was dying, the nuns asked her, "You look down on us from on high, will you not?" And she said, "No, I shall come down." So yeah, she wants to be with all of us. She said, "I'll spend my heaven doing good on earth." So yeah. So even if you're not a relics person, you should be a Saint Therese person.
Absolutely. Yeah. If people are just tuning in, I'm speaking with singer-songwriter Marie Miller, our featured artist this week. We were just talking about Saint Therese, because Marie has these presentations. She calls them the Way of Love presentations, based on her whole album that she wrote, inspired by, can I say that, Marie? Inspired by the writings of Saint Therese. But there's also that one song, actually, maybe there might be more than one song we spoke about it last time, because it's inspired by the words of Saint Ignatius, mm-hmm. the prayer by Saint Ignatius, not by Saint Therese. But I remember you telling me, Marie, that you imagine Saint Therese saying that prayer.
Yes, exactly. And total surrender to his merciful love, which that prayer is total surrender, the surrender prayer of Saint Ignatius. So I feel like saints, they can hold hands and help us through things. So I would say that her and Saint Ignatius are probably friends in heaven having that idea.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So that's Take Lord Receive. We heard that song just before Marie came on. Yeah, what a neat idea that someone who we call saint today, Saint Therese, would have already known about Saint Ignatius, who lived, what, 200 years before her or something, 300 years, and that she could have already been benefiting from Saint Ignatius's writings and discernment writings and spiritual exercises. Like, what a neat idea.
I love that. I love that Mother Teresa was so inspired by Saint Therese. Right. So it's, one of my favorite things is that Saint Therese wanted to be a missionary, and that was a desire of her heart that God did not fulfill necessarily in this life.
Yeah.
But here she inspired another Teresa who has convents all over the world and is helping people all over the world, who's a true missionary. So God is just, you know, he's got a lot of time on his hands. He can make things happen.
Yeah. There's another song in the album that we played at the top of the show called Among These Rocks. That one's based on Saint Therese as well.
So this one is based more in my literary world and Our Lady. So there is a line that says, "Will the veiled sister pray for the children at the gate?" This is right from T.S. Eliot's poem Ash Wednesday. And that can be a little bit of a tap to Saint Therese or Our Lady. You can decide what veiled sister that is. But this idea, but I was really inspired by this poem because it's a poem that I saw as a poem during suffering, how hard it is to pray. And this idea that Our Lady was given to us by our Lord during his crucifixion so that she could stand at the foot of every one of our crosses. And so it's this prayer to her. Keep us to sit still, even among these rocks, our peace in his will, even among these rocks, there's light on the hill, even among these rocks. So believing, and again, T.S. Eliot really wrote most of this. So I just took pieces of his poem. But it was, the idea of Our Lady in suffering and how she can be with us through that time.
Okay, so just correct me if I'm wrong. T.S. Eliot wrote a poem about Our Lady, or you took his words and kind of readapted it?
Yeah, he wrote a poem about a lady veiled that was helping him through. Sort of a,
I see.
Yeah, sort of a Dante and Beatrice kind of situation.
Yeah, okay.
And I took it. I Christianize it.
To mean Our Lady.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. And among these rocks being wherever that suffering is, wherever we are at the foot of the cross, that's how I imagine rocks.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. That's a beautiful idea. And I think a lot of us struggle with that idea that we really want to surrender and we seek God and we really desire it. But at the same time, we're just afraid of what that would look like. At least for me, the not knowing the full, not having the full picture. It's hard to stay among these rocks when you can't see the other side of the hill kind of thing.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, believe me, I know. And I wanted to write this knowing, because we can talk about our faith, and then if we leave out suffering, we're not bringing in kind of what this Valley of Tears is like. We're all suffering in some way. And so we need to talk about it and talk about how our Lord knows so much that we're suffering and he wants to be with us in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh gosh. Suffering. That's a whole other conversation.
next time
let's tune in for Suffering with Marie Miller. You wrote another song, which I mean, it's the one I've been talking about it since the beginning of the show, about another saint, a young saint, a contemporary saint, maybe one of the two newest saints, Carlo Acutis. Why did you want to write a song? Is it dedicated to him? Is it inspired by him? Tell us about Highest Home.
Yeah. And actually, I also wrote about Pier Giorgio Fossati too. This song
good.
Is about both of them.
My mistake.
No, you're good.
I'm glad. Can I confess? Because
sure.
I'm glad you're saying that, because I always feel like there was like, I knew so much about Pier Giorgio over the last 20 years, and all of a sudden Carlo Acutis came and I felt like he was like overshadowing Pier Giorgio. So I'm glad to hear that the song is about both of them, because they're both.
No, I agree. I agree with you. I had the same thing. And I will say that Carlo Acutis and I became friends, heavenly friends, when he, a long time ago, it's like 2020. And I just was looking for a saint to do a novena to, and he landed on the day that I was going to end. And so I picked him and really had a devotion to him. But prior to knowing him, when I lived in Nashville for many years, the campus chapel, Vanderbilt University chapel, was Frassati House. So where I fell in love with Jesus in adoration, going there, have, you know, being able to get through the crazy music industry was Frassati was with me. So I love that. But yeah, so the song is about both of them and about this idea that at a young age, they knew that this was a pilgrimage, that our lives are not home, and that they were willing to live a heroic life on this journey. So to the highest home. And Pier Giorgio has that great "to the heights" quote, right?
To the heights. Yes.
And so that I is that. My, I know, I love it. He's so cool. And Carlo Cuda says the infinite is our homeland. So I basically took kind of those two ideas and connected them together.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, of course, had you asked me, I would have said that there's the both saints have the Eucharist or that devotion or love for the Eucharist in common. Mm-hmm. But to hear you say that you fell in love with, you know, Eucharistic adoration or Jesus in the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist while you were going to Frassati House kind of really brought it home to me that these are two saints that really encourage us to go to the Eucharist. Mm-hmm. Which I guess, can we say that that's our highest home?
Yes. Yes. I mean, we get to participate in heaven now. And I think about it sometimes, what do I need the most today? Knowing that all goodness, all mercy, all hope, all truth is contained in the Eucharist. And so I say, Jesus, can you bring out a color that I need? You know, I really need hope today. I really need joy. I really need patience. and he is all patience, right? And so I think about that. And he is, we feed on all being in the Eucharist. And so it's very, you're right. It is the highest home.
That's a neat idea that you ask God for a color, or Jesus to give you a color. I ask for a word that's very literal, and then I don't get a word. I get like a full sentence. sometimes I don't get anything. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to start asking God for a color. I like that.
Well, I was reading the Magnificat, you know, Jesus is the light of the world, and it says, which brings color. And I didn't ever thought about that before, is that, that the light is the color. Mm-hmm. And so when we have the light of Jesus, we actually are our true color, which I did not think about. And in the darkness, we can't see ourselves. Cause I think people are afraid, if I become Christian, I'll be boring. It's like, no, if you fall in love with Jesus, you become the color you were made to be. I just think that's really neat.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I've seen a similar reflection that kind of shows that those who have not found Christ, that everything is kind of desaturated. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you enter into the relationship, it's like you become oversaturated. Everything is just like in full color, chroma color, or whatever you call it, which is a neat idea for people who are visual. I'm like you, maybe more audio kind of sounds. Mm-hmm. I hear sounds. I don't see things necessarily. Mm-hmm. Marie, thank you for sharing your music with us today. I hope people are excited about St. Therese, and now maybe they're excited about Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati, and maybe they can catch you in Lafayette. But if not, they can catch St. Therese wherever she's going on her tour. And maybe Carlo Acutis or Pier Giorgio will come on tour and you can join them.
That's true. I think my next album, if I do a saint, I think I have to do John Paul II, I think.
Oh, but good choice. Yeah. Okay, we can do that. I look forward to that. John Paul II is right up there. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Marie Miller, thank you so much. So good to see you. Always fun to talk to you. I look forward to more music from you.
Thank you so much. And even if you're not in Lafayette, I'm all over the country. So yeah, definitely check out the tour dates on the website for sure.
All right. Take care, Marie. It's so good seeing you.
Good seeing you too. Thank you.
You can learn more about Marie Miller and download all her music at mariemillermusic.com. And you can also find Marie Miller on all your social media. Here now is Marie Miller with that single that we were just talking about, inspired by and dedicated to Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati.
It'll be easier to stay on the outside looking up, living comfortably enough. I hear you calling my name from the mountains.
We're listening to Marie Miller with her single Highest Home, and that will take us to the end of the program. I hope that you like the new format for our show. It allows us a little more time for conversations, the conversations that you love with our featured guests. In the coming weeks, we have lots of new artists and also new guests talking about new films and new books, all great stuff. So I hope that you're ready to tune in for a great new season of the Salt and Light Hour. Make sure that you download the Salt and Light Plus app so that you can watch all our programs, videos, TV series, and documentaries. That's also the best place to listen to our show, the Salt and Light Hour, on demand, right off your phone. Today, let's continue to pray for peace in the world, especially in Gaza and Ukraine and Nigeria. Let's pray for Pope Leo, that he gets all the rest and leisure time that he needs, and for all people who feel that they are not worthy of the help that they receive and the gifts that they receive from God. Let's pray for all those who have difficulties choosing life every day of their lives. And let's pray for all this through the intercession of Saint Therese and also Saints Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati. I also pray for you, my dear listeners, so don't forget to pray for me and for each other, and take care of each other. Thank you for being with us. I'm Deacon Pedro, and this has been the Salt and Light Hour.